Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a snowy edition of the Macko and Cos podcast. Now, if you're not living in the GTA, the Greater Toronto Area, or somewhere in Southern Ontario, I have no idea what your weather is like. But, Bob, it's snowing. It's snowing.
Well, Matt, it's April, and there's always one snowfall in April, and then you're done. And you know what? I hope this is it. You know why? Because in New York City, they had a storm.
Yeah.
If we get a light dusting of snow and that's it, consider us lucky.
Sort of. I get what you're saying. Here's the problem. You know what we've not had for the entire month of March and now 6 days into April?
A Raptors team that's willing to play defense?
We'll get to that. By the way, there's a heel turn coming with me with the Raptors.
Really?
Oh, there's a heel turn.
Uh-oh.
There's a big heel turn. Okay. Anyway.
he said through clenched teeth.
Yeah.
Your face went red.
Yeah.
It's like you were a lobster dropped into a pot.
A lot to get to there. But we haven't had one warm stretch. Like, I remember so many years during March Madness, you know, popping from bar to bar when I was younger, and the weather was warm. We haven't had two warm days from March 1st to today.
Okay,
no warmth.
But we did have a lot of clear days.
Yes.
You were in Florida.
Yeah.
You missed them.
Yeah, guess what? I also knew it was rainy in Toronto because I would check all the time what the weather was like in Toronto because, again, I'm a jerk.
That is such a D-bag move.
I know.
You would look back at the weather at home to make sure it wasn't good?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, isn't it enough that you go to Naples and hang out and eat grouper sandwiches?
Oh, I wish I was there right now.
By the way, the fish sandwich, and I know we talked about fish last week, so I don't want to overindulge. But one thing
we'll keep it to a tight 12 minutes of fish talk.
A nice, lean, nifty 12 minutes. The fish sandwich is underrated.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like a good fried piece of fish.
Yeah.
My number one sandwich that I make, and I consider myself something of a sandwich artist.
A real one, not like those dopes at Subway.
Yeah, they're who are they fooling? Anyway, it's a nice fried piece of fish.
Yep.
And then I get a baguette and toast it.
Yeah.
Throw down a little tartar because my wife loves tartar sauce.
Yeah.
A little salt, a little lettuce. She doesn't go for tomato. I would add the tomato personally. But with just a little bit of lemon, that is a tasty, tasty sandwich.
It's a great sandwich. The tartar sauce is key.
The fish sandwich, though, doesn't get the love.
People are afraid of fish. You know,
are people a little weirded out because they see the heads and the big googly eyes? And
fish is a bit more of a commitment. There's more of a mystery there. You don't have usually people don't have fish as much as they have chicken or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the fish, it's a risk. It's a bit of a risk.
Oh, here's a question for you. What's the most boring food that people eat?
Chicken.
Yeah, but narrow it down. I think it's chicken fingers. I think chicken fingers are the default boring thing to get.
There's a bread.
Chicken fingers are almost never good.
No, but
that is the chicken fingers' dirty secret. They're always dry. They're always crumbly.
No, but
the batter tends to be overdone.
But there's batter. It's breaded, and you can have ketchup.
There's so many better things that are battered and breaded.
Of
chicken
course.
Fingers are totally disappointing most of the time.
So I disagree. I mean, to me, chicken fingers falls into the It's never great, but it's always a 6.8 out of 10. It's
always
comfort
food.
That's
my point, is it's ultimately super boring.
Yes, but even more
boring.
Mac
and cheese can be delicious. That,
of course. The most boring, though, is just a chicken breast. You know, it's like, you know, when you go on the diet, as you know.
I know a bit about this.
It's just like, oh, what can I have? Well, you can have a piece of chicken breast.
I agree with you in the sense of flavoring, but
if
you get a good chicken breast and you cook it well, then it's really quite delicious because it's juicy. Chicken fingers are never juicy. They come out like tinder.
I will take, I get what you're saying.
You would take a dry chicken stick over a juicy chicken breast.
Yes.
Well, we're just going to have to agree to disagree, Matt. And we managed to do it in under 12 minutes.
These are the hot fights that happen here on the Macko and Cos podcast.
I've been thinking a lot about food ever since I got off my cleanse.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, weather stinks. Stupid snow. But
I got a dot, dot, dot to do this week.
Yep.
Matt, apparently you're going to go off and do a heel turn on the Raptors.
100%.
We can talk Leafs, I guess.
I am tired of Leafs talks. Here's all I'm going to say. Good job, Leafs, last night. Frederik Andersen looked good. Check. Feel a little bit better. Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Riley combined for one block shot between the four of them, and combined they administered one hit between the four of them. Good job, guys. No hero hockey, and Andersen looked good.
Right, just get into the playoffs. Then you can start blocking shots a la John Tortorella.
I
kind of feel like the blocked shot might be the most overrated, you know, to go back to the chicken fingers argument, the most overrated stat in all of hockey might be the blocked shot.
Yeah, it also you know, shows that the other team has possession.
100%.
And they're shooting the puck at the net.
Right, and when you see guys get hurt, especially talented players, you think to yourself, oh, hero, come on, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Remember there was that one series, I guess it was New York versus, I'm trying to think who it was. It was in the conference final that year they went to the finals. And they were just laying out for everything. It was outrageous. Now, of course, it's effective in that the goalie doesn't actually see the shots. But by the time they got to the finals, they were broken and destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
They were like a bag of shattered bones. So way to go, gang.
Yeah, Tortorella got the most out of them. I got to tell you.
Or maybe the least, because maybe if they would have done it a little bit less, they could have won and gotten to the finals and put up a better fight.
I felt those Ranger teams with Tortorella, they got as far as... I just don't think they had the elite talent. But you could be right. I mean,
they had Lundqvist and good teams. I guess my point is, if you're going to beat the crap out of your teams over the first two or three rounds, blocking every shot in sight... There's a cumulative effect. You saw this with Vancouver and how battered... that Anaheim series back in, I guess it was 2011, when they made it to the finals but then lost to Boston.
Yep.
Like, they were dead on their skates.
Mm-hmm.
That was a zombie team by the time they got to the finals.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. But yeah, I agree with you on talking about the Leafs. Next week, we can talk Leafs. I am so bleeping sick and tired of the question, who would you rather face, Tampa or Boston? They're so tight. They're so cool.
Wasn't that from 2 weeks ago, that question?
2 weeks ago. What? Today. Do you know why? Because now they're more likely to face Boston. A couple days ago, it was Tampa. And listen, I understand the impetus behind the question, but it's just going to be so much more interesting when we actually know.
If we're going to talk about last night in hockey, there was a ton of great stuff to talk about. And I think it's got to start with Taylor Hall, who now looks like he will be the MVP of the year. And I don't know what it is about Peter Chiarelli, the general manager of the Edmonton Oilers, that elicits such joy when he fails.
It is an interesting one. The hockey analytics, the bloggers, and I would say the under 35 set, they hate Chiarelli. And my theory is there is a lot of negativity towards mainstream media. And there's 100 different reasons why. Some are legit, some of it definitely not legit. And I think they get sick and tired of, oh, mainstream media loves Peter Chiarelli. We must hate Peter Chiarelli. And there's plenty of ways to get on Chiarelli in terms of traded Seguin, traded Kessel, traded Hall. I think part of it is the younger set loves the younger player under any circumstances. So they look at Chiarelli as the villain.
It's an interesting thing about young players. I wonder out loud, I know the answer to this, but... because the Taylor Hall thing was so embarrassing for the Edmonton Oilers.
Yep.
And it's not like Montreal came out smelling that sweet with the PK deal.
Nope.
At what point do GMs, and maybe that point is now, just you never give up on young players.
Mm-hmm.
You just never give up on them.
Yep.
Unless they're detonating stink bombs in the dressing room. And even that you could probably put up.
Well,
with.
Like the Drouin situation had to be addressed. Evander Kane had to be addressed. But yeah, you're right. You know, don't sleep on young players. And by the way, let's see what, you know, Kane does in come playoff time. With Chiarelli, I mean, trust me, I've made plenty of fun of him this week, just about what's happening with Taylor Hall and what's happening.
He's nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
There has to be a bunker somewhere. It's like the remember the Saddam Hussein foxhole that they found him in?
Yeah.
He is deep, deep undercover right now.
Oh, yeah. And I think,
and should be.
Yeah, and I think one reason why people shouldn't, you know, would be upset at Chiarelli, and I get this, is that it feels like you're wasting years out of Connor McDavid. And, you know, everyone loves Connor McDavid because he's fun, and we're not getting to see the best out of him, not because of him, but because the team around him and the idea of two of his 3 years, he's not in the playoffs. you're just like, oh my God.
So here's my question. This is really the broader question.
Yeah.
Because the young player is now so important in the league, mm-hmm. and because finding them and keeping them is really the key to any success.
Yep.
At what point do team presidents and team owners start to make your ability to work with young kids the priority, as opposed to experience? It used to be like if you had a cup ring, you were golden.
Yeah.
You know, you see this with players all the time. Remember we had this conversation about Dave Boland? Oh, he's a cup winner.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it's not like he was a bad player on a great team and he happened to get a ring. No, he won and he's got the experience. And there was kind of this feeling about coaches and general managers. If they've been there before, they must know something. But I wonder to what point, like, does the NHL follow the lead of other sports where it's simply, how good are you at development? How good are you at relating to young players? Let the veterans take care of themselves. But really, it's all about the kids. Because Peter Chiarelli, when he was in Boston, was terrible with kids. And that room was terrible with kids, too. Bergeron, Chara, these guys. Like, they didn't want to put up with any young kids' nonsense.
Yeah.
And it led to the Tyler Seguin being shipped out of town, Dougie Hamilton shipped out of town. They've recovered, obviously. But my point is simply this. If you were a team owner now, and you were looking to get coach or and or management, how important would it be for you to find someone who is excellent at relating to kids?
Oh, 100%. And one way you can look at this is salary cap. If you can develop young players, well, there's going to be a couple of years where you're going to have them under control before they become free agents. If you can develop, you know, if you can develop the 21-year-old and turn them into Connor Brown, and they get a couple of years where they're not a top, you know, they're not a top six forward, but let's say they're a good, you know, bottom six and they're productive, well, boom, you're paying them $1.2 million.
Right, and you make a good point about the Leafs and the Marlies because a lot of the success in terms of developing that roster has to go to Kyle Dubas and to Sheldon Keefe, who have both respectively been in charge of the Marlies.
Yeah.
And the Leafs have depth.
Yeah.
The Leafs have players that they can sub in. In fact, I think it's pretty obvious in a lot of cases, the substitutes are better than the incumbents.
Mm-hmm.
And more, I just keep thinking... We saw this in basketball once upon a time. Remember when it was important to get the player's coach? Who are the guys who have played before? Who are the guys who can relate to the new generation of stars? That's proven to be kind of successful.
Well, it depends. I mean, Popovich, you know, he can...
Outlier.
Outlier.
Even look at the Yankees. Like, they got rid of Joe Girardi because he wasn't relating to the player in the way that Boone is apparently going to relate to the player.
We'll see.
I mean, even... We'll see.
Yeah.
But this thinking permeates everywhere. And I feel like it doesn't really exist in hockey in the same way where it's still like, have you done it before? Have you paid your dues? And I don't know that teams can afford to think that way much longer.
Well, it's the most conservative of the sports. And the funny thing is, it's just... The funny thing about the conservative nature of hockey, the knee-jerk reaction is to blame, you know, the coaches or the GMs or the scouts. Well, it's also the players.
Mm-hmm.
How many players do you see going out there trying to break the mold or change things? The players, so many of the players are just as comfortable being in that mindset. And I know I sometimes complain about it, but if they're happy being there, then if you want to be conservative, no. If y'all are happy, then who am I to tell you, you know, you shouldn't be like that.
I think it's really interesting that you almost let the genie out of the bottle, the toothpaste out of the tube with these kids because they are now coached up from the time that they are 8 years old.
They're so much more mature at 21 than what they were a decade ago.
We have asked them to behave like professionals. We have asked them to think like adults from the time that they are in their early teens. And so when they actually get to the league and they're really good and they behave kind of like adults or equals, then it's like, oh, no. You're just a kid. These kids have never been just kids.
Yeah.
You know, this whole idea of the pecking order. Matthews is a great example. He's been a man since he was 14.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Hang on a second, Maddie. I just got to run and turn down the heat on my race.
Okay,
so I'll be right back.
Okay, Bob's dealing with some soup. But the interesting thing about Austin Matthews is he's been in the fishbowl. And a lot of this is Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, and it's Shanahan and Babcock and Lamoriello providing, you know, this safe environment. But Matthews has been nothing but a star in one of the biggest hockey markets in North America, and you haven't heard squat about him. No slip-ups, no controversy, no odd statement, nothing.
The hockey world loves it when you get a story like Mitch Marner, who gets bumped down to the fourth line, and he takes his lumps with graciousness and humility, and then he winds up, you know, he's a 60-point player.
Yep.
And he's terrific. Mm-hmm. And everyone looks at this as an example of, see, now that's how you're supposed to do it. And we all line up and applaud, and everybody in their gold button blue blazers and their bad hockey crests goes, see, this is the way you play the game. But what they forget is like the dozens of times that these kids don't operate that way. And it's almost as though we treat the kids who don't operate that way as the outliers, as opposed to Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
I think they just got to get used to the idea that these kids are not coming in as kids anymore.
By the way, the interesting thing is the biggest name on the Maple Leafs management staff to say from day one when he was a rookie, no, Marner's going to be on the big squad, was Lou Lamoriello. You know, the 73-year-old old guard fella, he was the one early in training camp last year that said, no, there's no Marlies, there's no development, there's no send him back here or he's going over here. He's going to be with the Maple Leafs from day one. And he was.
Although I will give Lou credit that...
I'm giving him total credit.
He's kept the lid on this team pretty well. Mm-hmm. Toronto's a tough market to be young and awesome in. It's pretty easy to lose your way. But they've drafted kids who obviously have the capacity to self-regulate.
Yeah.
So good for all them. But my point is simply this with Taylor Hall.
Yeah.
Now that he's going to win the MVP, it seems like a foregone conclusion.
Him or McKinnon.
I love how this kicks Edmonton.
Oh, we all do.
This is just so, and I don't know why I feel this way.
Yeah.
I just do.
It's because Edmonton keeps getting rewarded for being bad with incredibly high draft picks, and they waste it. And there's something about it that just rubs us all the wrong way. We all feel same about this.
I know what it is. I think it's because they scapegoated Taylor Hall, and so this is the classic narrative reversal. Mm-hmm. They made him the, once we get rid of Taylor Hall, then I guess we'll have the chemistry we need and that losing stink is going to be out of our room.
Yeah.
So it's like this amazing young winger who played really hard and was incredibly good was somehow blamed for all their playoff failure. And then he leaves and wins the MVP and gets a bad team into the playoffs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Team. And is far away the best player on that team.
The Devils were last. Got the number one pick in the draft last year. Question for you, Bob.
Yeah, buddy boy.
Related to all this.
I got a couple questions for you, too, but you go first.
Nice. There's a couple things that, and I just thought of this off the top of my head. There's a couple things that galvanize Hockey Canada. One is the hatred of the Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
Two is this hatred of Edmonton, but in a different way. So what do you think Canada would hate more?
Good question.
The Leafs getting to the Stanley Cup Finals or Edmonton getting the number one overall pick?
Oh, that is a great would you rather for the nation of Canada.
Yes.
I'm going to say they would hate Edmonton getting the first pick more. Mm-hmm. Just because of the...
They do it every goddamn year.
And they're going to get Rasmus Dahlin.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like getting McDavid on defense.
Yeah.
And if you can't win with that. But anyway, yeah, that's a great question. So let me throw this one back at you. Oh, what do you think? I didn't ask your opinion.
Oh, I think it's Edmonton as well. So I didn't say the Leafs win the Stanley Cup.
Just get there.
Get to the Cup Finals. I think it's Edmonton just because of the amount of times they've got the number one pick. And... we don't like it because Edmonton getting Darlene is the equivalent of a bratty 16-year-old who's done nothing right with their life getting a Jaguar from their parents on the 16th birthday. It's like, you didn't deserve this. You didn't do anything right. And you're still getting that car. Get the hell out of here with that sweater tied around your neck.
All right. So even though this won't happen, here's a question for you.
All right.
What would the average Canadian hockey fan, who would they rather cheer for? The Toronto Maple Leafs in the finals or the Anaheim Ducks? And I use Anaheim as the example of the southern market that everybody says shouldn't exist and they hate them.
And also Anaheim's already won a cup because maybe like, oh, I'm rooting for blank because they've never won it before.
Like a San Jose.
Yeah, exactly. A perfect example. Oof. Anaheim
or Toronto? And I'm talking about that dude in North Battleford, Saskatchewan. You know what I think the answer is, Matt?
Mm.
They ain't watching.
Yeah, they're not watching.
They're just not watching.
Yeah, God, that's tough. I mean, I guess you could... I mean, I can't root for Corey Perry. I'm trying to think of what prominent Canadians are on Anaheim that you can... No, but they've all won it before. It might be the Maple Leafs. It might be just because, like...
To finally have a Canadian team win?
And the thing is, Leaf fans can be hard to get behind, But the players, there's no real obnoxious players. And you could sell Patrick Marleau has never won at all.
Mike Babcock has coached the Canadian team. Yeah, people across the country like him.
He's got roots in Saskatchewan and stuff. I think it's close. I'm going to give it Maple Leafs by just a nose.
It's weird. And I agree with you, although everything in my brain says that's impossible. There's no way Canada could get behind the Leafs. Yeah. But would you take a... not an inconsequential organization, because Anaheim's, you know, like you say, they've been there before, but a classic Southern Californian team versus your own.
Yeah. All right. Now, my question back to you.
Okay.
Scale of 1 to 10, how condescending is this statement? And I've heard this from several people. I can't root for another Canadian team, but I can for Winnipeg. I could root for Winnipeg. And I'll explain to you why, just to set up a little bit, because it might seem out of nowhere. It seems very condescending, because it's like, oh, I can't root for Ottawa or Montreal or this team or that team. But Winnipeg, you're like, oh, poor Winnipeg. Oh, little Winnipeg, you're so cold. And then there's mosquitoes, and no one likes you. And Chris Pronger's wife wouldn't want to be in Edmonton and certainly wouldn't want to be in Winnipeg.
Ilya Bryzgalov didn't want to go there.
So we're rooting for you, Winnipeg. Yes, you are. You little town.
See, I see it differently, though, although I do appreciate
it. Do you see what I'm getting at?
I do, but I don't think that's why they would root for Winnipeg. Let me throw it back to you this way.
Yeah.
All their stars are their stars. Mm-hmm. They drafted them. They developed them. They didn't make any stupid moves, and they've been patient.
Yep.
The fans are hilarious. They're the best fans in the NHL. Everybody knows this, and there's no debate about it. So you know whoever they wind up facing in the final will get the best heckling of their lives.
Yep.
You know, Ryan Miller, silver medal. They're just the best. Ovi skates onto the ice. Crosby's better. Like, they're just the best. So... as organizations go, I don't know if it's like the small, you know, underdog kind of mentality. As much as it is, there's tons to admire about that organization.
There is.
I don't see them as a hardship case. I see them as doing it the right way.
No. The team isn't the hardship case.
The city?
The city is the hardship case.
Like, do you think Winnipeg's that much worse off than Edmonton when it comes to being a city? Edmonton's further north.
Yep.
And like, believe me, but there are a lot of
you're closer to places to ski. I don't know. I got this sense that like people rooting for Winnipeg.
What's worse off, Winnipeg or Buffalo?
You know what? I can't answer that. I haven't been to Winnipeg, and this is not me whipping Winnipeg. This is my perception of other people. Because I'm like people are like, oh no, I wouldn't root for Ottawa and Montreal, but I'd root for Winnipeg. I'm like, huh.
Because they're fun, because they've done it the right way, and the MTS Center is the best rink in all of hockey. Not in terms of necessarily the physical layout, but just in terms of the vibe that's created when you go there. And I've been to Winnipeg a half a dozen times in various capacities. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy place to love because it's not physically beautiful, and it's cold as bloody hell. But man, it's an interesting place. It's got kind of like this frontier weirdness to it. I'm convinced that 30 to 40% of the buildings in Winnipeg are haunted.
First, it needs to be said, no one at the Winnipeg Travel and Tourism Board is going to describe it as funky frontier. Is that?
Frontier weirdness.
No,
there's a lot of really talented, interesting people that come from Winnipeg because what the hell else are you going to do? Except be, it's like, you know how you get writers that come out of the Pacific Northwest because it's raining all the time. Yep. So you stay indoors and you read.
Chuck Palahniuk.
Right, there you
Fight
go.
Club.
Just one. Yeah. You know, where was grunge born? Seattle. Yep. Why? Rains a lot.
Yep.
All right, so my point is Winnipeg breeds a lot of interesting artists because you stay inside and practice your craft.
That's fair.
Same way that like football is a Florida thing.
Yeah.
And baseball is a Arizona and California thing.
See, this is interesting. Are there more great inventors or geniuses from, say, is the colder the weather, the smarter the people, because they're going to be indoors more. Like,
yeah,
I wonder, like, if I lived my entire life in, say, Hawaii or LA, I don't know if I would have spent as much time inside reading because the weather was always nice. And it's not that if you live there, you don't have the capacity for brilliance. It's that you have the hindrance of all these beautiful things that are going to distract you from the tools required for brilliance.
I always wondered, how on earth could you study for an exam if you went to USC?
Yeah.
What? Like, it's beautiful out.
Yeah.
There's the beach.
Yes.
It was easy to do it at U of T. It was snowing.
And you know what? Here's an example. I'm going to give a real life example. When, as you know this, when I was studying for my final sommelier exam, a diploma level wine thing, I left my condo because it had some distractions. And I went to a nondescript hotel by the airport for 5 days. Why? Because I wanted even fewer distractions so I could spend 5 days studying. It's the same thing. Like, you know, the more distractions you have, like being in California or Hawaii, the harder it is.
It's a really good point. And it was, I like the fact that you picked a nondescript place by the airport.
Yeah.
It was like the hotel in Scarface where they wind up doing the deal and he winds up getting the chainsaw in the head.
Yeah.
It's just a regular old place.
You couldn't trust me. This hotel, you couldn't leave. And if you walked, you could go to the, there was a Tim Hortons, but you couldn't walk to anywhere. So you were kind of stuck there.
No, you were smart. You did it good. Yeah. Okay. Before we move on to the Raptors, because I want to hear you tee off on this.
Yeah.
We got a lot of dot, dot, dots. It gave you a lot of options this time. But I want to talk about the Sedins because you and I are now leading the charge for them not to be admitted to the Hall of Fame.
In the first year,
even in the same year.
No, just the same year. One goes in year one, one goes in after 1 year of done of eligibility.
Okay, so the creepiness continues, right? This whole idea that something's up with these guys.
Yeah.
They look the same. They've always played together. They almost have an identical number of points. They played, I believe, 96% of all their minutes were played together.
Yeah.
When one was on the ice, so was someone else.
It's like they weren't allowed to be injured because then the other one wouldn't be injured.
Like they have super protective parents that never let them to be apart.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's... And then last night, they wind up... Henrik sets up Daniel to score the overtime winner in their final home appearance.
So selfish of them because they're playing Arizona, which means Arizona now has a better chance of getting the number one pick. Good job, Sedins. You hurt your franchise for the future.
No, they did clear up $14 million in cap space. So
that is also true.
So there was that.
But
clearly there's something weird, right?
Yes.
Like in their last game, they pull off some kind of storybook miracle, right?
Voodoo.
Hockey something voodoo. Is up with these guys. So I'm going to give you three options. What is the most likely options?
Okay.
They are aliens. Mm-hmm. They are ghosts. Mm-hmm. Ghost players. Or it's like a weird science a la Stranger Things where they were created in a lab to be two identical hockey player brothers. Aliens, ghosts, or Stranger Things?
Which one of those three? I'm going to go ghosts because I don't think ghosts age.
And they're pale.
Yeah.
They're very pale.
Yeah. And ghosts, like any movie with ghosts, they don't age over time. They whatever you see them as, that's what they look like.
Yeah, like ghosts don't have to shave.
Yeah, same thing with the Sedins. They kind of look the same now versus what they did in the past. So I'll go ghosts.
See, I'm going to go with the weird science a la Stranger Things because mm-hmm. they feel like they were created in a Petri dish and they were kind of raised in like adjacent stalls. Mm-hmm. And then that's why they can't be separated.
Yeah.
I maintain it's a David Cronenberg movie waiting to happen. But, you know, think about Eleven and Stranger Things. Have you seen it?
Of course.
Oh, okay, good. Well, you don't have Netflix.
Girlfriend's twin sister, actually, ironically. She has Netflix, so I've watched it over there.
You're a twin. They're twins, man. That's a story waiting to happen. It feels like they're both like the hockey version of Eleven.
Yeah.
They have some kind of psychic mind meld that they share. And clearly, if nothing else, I think we can agree that last night proves they are not normal human beings.
100%. They are one of the most unique phenomenons in the history of the NHL.
Super phenomenon.
Yes.
Where do you want to go now? We can talk Raptors or we can do dot, dot, dot.
Well, before we do either of those, Bob, you know what I want to talk about? I want to talk about tickets. I want to talk about our Canadian partner on this show, Seat Giant. And you can get all your tickets, concerts, sporting events, everything and anything in North America. Just go to seatgiant.ca. All tickets are in Canadian dollars. Yes, all tickets are at seatgiant.ca. It's not like when you buy your tickets in American dollars, then you got to break out the calculator. You got to go watch CNN or BNN and figure out what's the conversion rate today. No, they do the conversion rate for you. And it gets even better for these legitimate tickets, and they stand by all of them. Just use the discount code Bob and Matt. That's Bob and Matt at checkout. You save money. You get a discount. We get a small cut, which is fantastic because podcast ain't free. No more exchange fees, bank fees, or anything. What you see at checkout is what you pay. SeatGiant.ca.
I usually grade you.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, I kind of tuned out.
Yeah.
At what point do you think people will tune these out?
I keep putting them on at different points of the podcast.
So you think that'll spice it up a little bit?
Yeah, it's like doo-doo-doo, narrative fish sandwiches, soup talk. bam, I'm giving you a read.
I don't know.
By the way, speaking of soup talk, you know, you were worried about it because you're cooking like some sort of turkey
soup. I'm doing a turkey soup, yeah.
And you almost like, you're like, oh, sorry for the smell. Love the smell.
It's
a
delicious
smell. Who doesn't love walking into a house, the smell of homemade soup?
They do the wrong things in vaporizers. You know, they got these little contraptions that like put
mango mist.
Yeah, peppermint or patchouli or whatever. Yeah. It should be delicious foods.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what about like just deep fryer grease?
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%.
Oh, here's the perfect infuser. You ready for this? KFC. Is there any food out there where the actual taste is so disproportionately less delicious than the smell?
I get what you're going there, but it's a little too... KFC for me is a little too aggressive. The greasy is a little too aggressive
so
for
good.
Me.
My mouth is literally watering right now.
I know. Like,
but it smells so good and it only tastes okay.
I'm going to give... I think it tastes... Actually, I haven't had KFC in years. It's salty. I'll say this. I remember getting woken up because doing morning radio, you know, you tend to take naps. I got woken up to the smell, my girlfriend cooking homemade chili. That... Ooh, next week, top five food smells.
Done.
Like we needed to talk anymore. Like exactly. Convince each other about
Should
that.
I just do my restaurant recommendation now and we'll get to your wine one later?
Yeah.
Check out One Love Vegetarian Cuisine at Bathurst and Bloor. They do a really great corn chowder and they have a Caribbean infused menu. So it's vegetarian and vegan, but it's done with that island flavor.
Love it.
So, you know, whether you're vegan, vegetarian, or you're just looking for some good food, because island food can be so delicious.
Yep.
Go for it. Yeah. One Love Vegetarian Cuisine.
Corn chowder with a Caribbean sort of flavor.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
See? Totally. Yeah. Very, very good stuff. All right. So shall we get to the Raptors or ... my friend?
We'll get to the Raptors and we'll get to ...
Okay. And I also want to talk about TFC.
Sure.
Because I took my godson to go see the game against Club America.
Ooh.
What people are calling the craziest night in the history of BMO.
Yeah.
It was wild.
Yeah. Oh,
God. It was
God.
So good. Let's just do it quickly now on that.
Yeah,
just
go.
Because I can't do any soccer analysis. But I will say this. TFC is really quickly becoming the most fun live sporting event in the city.
Nice.
If it isn't already, I don't know soccer. Like, he's telling me about midfielders and wingbacks, and, you know, I'm nodding and I'm trying to play along, but I don't know what's going on. I just kick ball forward, not give ball to other team.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, the crowd's the best. And it was like practically freezing rain, blowing sideways. You know.
Horrible night to watch. To watch a game outside.
But it was so bad, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Because what you don't want is for it to be dreary and kind of drizzly. Because that's not memorable and it's just unpleasant.
But this is now you all are banding together against Mother Nature.
100%. So you create a sense of community, camaraderie, and you create a memory. Like, if it had been drizzly, I'd be like, oh, yeah, remember we went to that game? That was kind of unpleasant. But now it's going to be like, do you remember we went to that insane game? And it helped that they won 3-1.
Yes.
Fights in the tunnel. Yep. Accusations of police brutality.
Yeah, which was just ridiculous. That coach for Club America, that guy's got a shady, shady past.
There is. It's going to be nutty on Tuesday. I hope our team. Are we allowed to put them in Kevlar?
Oh, I know. Yeah, here's the key. You know, they all walk out with children. The children need to stay
human
in the
shields.
Yes, they need to stay in the tunnel as child human shield.
Like the last scene in The Dead Zone where Martin Sheen's character picks up the child to protect himself.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, but it was released in 1983. Ooh, so
another top five list for another day.
Okay.
Top five most cowardly moments in cinema.
How about top five? How about top five Stephen King movies?
Yep, there's that one as well.
Shining's number one. I feel like we should almost like... But the funny thing about that, can I do my nerdy movie thing?
Yeah, go.
So Kubrick loved the story, but didn't really have much time for King's interpretation of his own story.
Yeah.
So he phones him up in the middle of the night. He's optioned the rights. He's writing the screenplay. And he phones him up. Middle of the night, the phone rings. Stephen King picks it up.
Oh, yeah.
Huh? Hello? Yeah? Yeah. Hi, Stephen. This is Kubrick here. Do you believe in God? Well, yeah, I guess so. I thought so. Click.
I remember that story.
I love that.
Oh, so dismissive. He did not like Stephen King at all.
In fact, there's a story that in the... Do you remember how they drive into the Overlook and they've got the yellow Beetle, the yellow VW Beetle that they're driving?
Yep.
In the book, it's a red one.
Yeah, because it was an FU. It was an FU to Stephen King.
Right, and if you watch later on in the story, there's a car crash when Scatman Crothers is trying to get to the Overlook.
Yep.
And the car that's crashed is a red Beetle. Mm-hmm. I love Kubrick. He's my hero. Okay. Let's get to it.
Yeah.
The Raptors, Matt. Now, before you start, let me just say, When we addressed this, even in the most cursory manner, Matt's face turned beet red, and the veins in his temples began to throb. So even though the Raptors beat Boston, I sense some malfeasance about to come from the mouth of Matthew Cause.
Before I thought the Raptors, I was convinced they're going to beat Cleveland in six. We went over all the reasons. Best team they've ever had. Cleveland is flawed. Fully new team. No Kyrie Irving on Cleveland. Hell, no Irving on any team anymore. But that's switch, Bob. And it did it from both stats and eyeball test. This is not just one thing. The eyeball test, you saw them get overwhelmed by OKC. You saw them get overwhelmed by Cleveland, not once, but twice. You saw them get beat by Boston before, where Boston scored 110 points a couple weeks ago. So the eyeball test was starting to get bad. But then there was one stat that was thrown out there late March. The Raptors have the second worst defense in the NBA against top 10 offenses. We always focus on the Raptors' offense going kaput come the playoffs. But that stat there sort of opened my eyes. And it's a reminder that, you know, much like, you know, the Raptors are great at beating jobbers. And guess what? The Raptors are more than that. You know, they'll beat Houston. And they've beaten good teams. And they're a great regular season product. But they're not going to get it done in the playoffs.
May I make a wrestling analogy?
Yeah.
Right now, they feel like the Intercontinental champs.
Yeah.
That they're able to beat up on everybody who's 250 pounds and smaller.
Yeah.
And you love them and you cheer for them.
Yeah.
You know, Tito Santana, the Macho Man. I'm thinking of great Intercontinental champs in the past. But you would never line them up against Hulk or Undertaker because they'd get squashed. Whereas Golden State feels like the Undertaker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Raptors can beat the Magnificent Morocco, but they ain't beating Hulk Hogan. And it's just watching, especially that second Cleveland game, watching Kyle Lowry give you nothing. And, you know, again, Lowry, nice job going to Villanova or going to San Antonio. I just, it did switch for me. And it wasn't one game. It was over the course of a couple weeks where I just feel we're going down the same path. You know, they're going to be in the first round and second round, and they could get to the finals, but it's going to be a slog. And then they're going to get beat up by Cleveland in five. And I don't have faith in DeMar to be able to lift the team. I don't have faith in Lowry anymore. I don't have faith in the defense. And really, it's no offense to the Raptors, because the Celtics teams from 2010 with Ray Allen, KG, Pierce, and Rondo, guess how they went out? LeBron James. The Chicago Bulls team that won like 58 games with Derrick Rose winning the MVP. How'd they go out? LeBron James. The Indiana Pacers team that looked like a real up-and-comer with Paul George and Roy Hibbert and Lance Stephenson when he was still sane. Who ended it for them? LeBron James. Atlanta Hawks win 60 games. Who ended it? LeBron James. The Raptors, the last 2 years, went 2-8 and got outscored by, I think, 18. So, again, Bob, all the optimism that I had all year, and I wanted to have it. I don't want to be negative Nelly. Well, me and Nelly are hanging out, and we're switching. We're both drinking from the same Mickey.
So, by the way, to extend the wrestling analogy, maybe Cleveland and LeBron James are a little bit like Goldberg. Remember when Goldberg was on that crazy stretch in the WCW and he beat everyone? I think he had 73 straight wins.
Yeah.
They kind of feel like that. He feels kind of like that. So here's my thing. I disagree with you that DeMar can't carry the team. I think he can carry the team. But what he can't do is he can't carry it the way a traditional alpha does with an insane 40-point night every night, because they're going to throw multiple players at him.
Yep.
That's just the way that you've always defended the Raptors, and that's the way you're going to defend them now. But I think DeMar has shown the ability to pass out of it, and I think he's shown the maturity to not feel like he has to do it on his own.
That is true.
Worst case scenario is he looks around at his teammate, CJ Miles ain't hitting nothing. You know, he's thinking Pascal Siakam, nope, not doing that. Yeah. If Lowry doesn't step up and make himself a viable second option, a great second option, DeMar's going to have to shoot through crazy coverage. That's the worst case scenario.
And Dwayne Casey as well. Part of it's going to be on him. You got to scheme. If Brad Stevens can get Boston to score 110 points against you, you're going to have to find ways to get DeMar DeRozan. I'm not talking open shots, but at least good looks.
I think his native ability to sort of get to the hole is going to be obviously diminished in the in the playoffs, because they just don't call as much. And so that's always been a tricky thing for him. All of this said, it's always been Kyle Lowry that's going to be the key to this playoff run, particularly since DeMar became the alpha. But they don't really have a great roster. They have a roster that's good at playing together, and they've been...
A great regular season roster.
Right.
They've got a great regular season roster. They've entertained the hell out of us for years.
But if Kyle, like, one of the things is they've been kind of saving Kyle Lowry for the playoffs. That's been the narrative all year long.
Five fewer minutes per game. That's huge.
Right. So now this is where it has to pay dividends. He's a $100 million guy. They cut down his minutes wildly. They didn't make him the focal point of the offense, but he still has to be exactly who he is. Mm-hmm. An all-star caliber player in the playoffs who gets bleep done.
That game against Cleveland, the loss on Tuesday night.
Right.
DeMar DeRozan had, and he had a lot of assists. He was passing well. He had two shots with 4 minutes to go in the second quarter. Two shots. That's not enough.
Okay, so let me throw this at you, because you're flipping. I'm not necessarily flipping. I said, if you remember going back months, I said that I think the Raptors...
You're more noncommittal than I was.
No. I was specifically, what I exactly said was, I think that the Raptors will make the conference finals, and I think there is a chance that they could make the finals.
Yeah.
Now, that was before Cleveland really started to stink out the joint. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things got revised.
Yeah, yeah.
But even as they reset to normal, I think they could make the conference finals. That is a reasonable goal.
Well, without Kyrie Irving out, now out, I mean,
100%.
There's no great team in the East. There's only one great player.
And they can beat Cleveland, but maybe not. And that's kind of how I felt they would be going into this year. Like, to me, that is actually, let's not let the first place finish in the East fool us. Mm-hmm. It would still be hard to beat Cleveland as yes. they're playing now. So if they made the finals and faced LeBron and gang and lost, for me, all I expect is a tough series. I want it to feel like
yes.
Miami versus San Antonio when Miami was just able to squeak it out and San Antonio had them all but beaten and there was the miracle Ray Allen shot.
Yeah.
Like, I need that kind of series where it's back and forth.
Yes, it's a perfect way to put it. To me, failure is not the Raptors not beating LeBron, because guess what? Since 2010, no one has beaten LeBron. No one. That's the list. Zero. But what I don't want is 2 years ago. I don't want us watching the Pacer game here. Right. We're like, what's going on? I don't want them losing game one. I don't want them down by 30 against Miami in the third quarter of a game. I don't want them struggling.
You know what? Here's my movie analogy. You know what I want? Mm. I want Rocky 1.
Yeah.
He lost.
He lost.
But he also put up a fight.
Yes.
And, do you remember Apollo Creed through his bloodied eye and his busted up lips and ribs?
No rematch.
Yeah. I want LeBron so battered at the end of it that he just looks at the Raptors, looks at DeMar DeRozan and says, no rematch.
The same way Michael Jordan's last title in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Pacers, the Davis brothers and Reggie Miller and all of that, where that went seven and they were... Like Pippen and Jordan were tired as hell. That's all I want. You're right. And I just...
Anything less than that will feel like a letdown.
Yeah.
Anything more than that will feel like gravy.
My feelings on the Raptors, I thought, okay, this team is semi-special. And now I'm getting PTSD from 2 years ago. This is the best version ever of the Raptors. But just the last couple of weeks have been so unimpressive. How about this? Out of 100, what chance would you give? Raptors are healthy. Cleveland's healthy. What chance would you give the Raptors?
40%.
Yeah. See, I'm like 12.
Really?
Yeah. I'm about 12.
When the Cleveland game was weird, and I think the Kyle Lowry thing may have thrown them off internally. I'm not a big fan in guessing what a locker room's narrative is, because who the hell
that
knows?
Be good?
How could? And also, I heard Josh Lewenberg on TSN 1050 the next day saying there were people within the Raptors organization who weren't happy about it.
Yeah.
And not so much that he went, because they're grown men, and as Leo Routens likes to say, it's a different lifestyle for NBA players. They work at night.
Yep.
A lot of times they don't go to bed until 4 o'clock in the morning anyway.
Yeah.
And it's a good point. But when you come in and you're not really ready to play, and then you go out and you lay an egg, I'm not surprised that they were bummed. But what I loved was the next night, they kicked Boston's ass. I know it was a depleted Boston team, but it doesn't matter. Like, they looked like they were angry. They played better defense than they've played in a long time, and more committed defense, not intellectually better, but just tougher D.
The cynic in me says Boston had no one who could handle the ball. Terry Rozier, injured ankle, no Irving, no Marcus Smart. They had dudes playing critical minutes of the second quarter, who were second round draft picks, who I think a guy named was Kadeem Allen. I didn't even know who this guy was.
Yeah, but let's
the cynic in me says the defense did play better against Cleveland, but how much of that was, damn, you're going to look better playing against a Boston team that had no answers?
That's probably true. It wasn't exactly like the Rockets game where they had to fight tooth and claw to get over a really, really tough opponent. It wasn't that. But it doesn't matter. To me, what I liked was the attitude. And again, intangibles, it's a bit of a fool's game. But they went out there and they looked embarrassed about the night before. They looked embarrassed about how they were playing lately. And it was classic sacrificial victim, Boston. To keep going with the wrestling analogies, they threw out the cannon fodder. They threw out, they were like Johnny Canine, and they just got suplexed, and it was never close.
No, it wasn't. And
not after the second quarter.
No team in the NBA is there a bigger gap between the leading scorer and the second leading scorer as in Boston. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like 12.4. It's like, you know, like Kyrie Irving's like 25 a game, and then somewhere like 12 point whatever is Jason Tatum. There's one that's tied. It's Houston. Their second best player is Chris Paul. So the drop-off is nowhere near as bad.
What we love about this team is that they're unconventional.
Mm-hmm.
That almost every good story on this team comes with an unpredictability.
Yeah.
Whether it's Dwayne Casey finding a career when he was basically shuffled out of the game. DeMar DeRozan turning himself year after year into a better player.
Masai Ujiri's run.
All of it.
Oh, yeah.
Pascal Siakam, Jakob Poeltl. Like, this just, it's a weird team
filled
with amazing stories.
And I think part of this is, I am more emotional about the Raptors than I am any other team in this market.
Tell me about how
hard DeMar DeRozan worked. Because of the transformation with Kyle Lowry, there's so much good there. Because of Dwayne Casey, because of Masai Ujiri, you know, there's all these things.
Matt, I couldn't even watch the fourth quarter of the Boston game because I said to myself, if they lose this, I will be so crushed. But I also couldn't not pay attention, so I went to my bedroom, sat there by myself in the dark with the laptop open, went to ESPN Gamecast, and watched Gamecast. And every single time that the winning percentage dropped anywhere below 97%, I started to curse. 97%! I'm pretty emotionally invested.
Bob, you know what I'm emotional about?
Mm.
I'm emotional about you.
Oh, okay.
And I'm emotional about me. And I'm emotional about your well-being.
Oh, thanks.
You know, because you've got a lovely wife. And you have a lovely daughter. Like, Sandra, your wife, is fantastic. And Cece, your daughter, is a treasure. And I mean it. Like, she's this really smart, clever girl. And you know what, Bob? You know what I'm happy about? I know that your family is going to be taken care of and is going to be safe. And why is that? Because of our lawyer, Jeff Pollock. This guy deals with everything, whether it's litigation, states and trusts, corporate commercial, real estate law. It doesn't matter. He is there for you. And it's a small law firm. You are not going to get lost in the shuffle. And let's say you got to deal with stuff with your finances, with taxes. I mean, hell, the other day, I got one of those fake accounting firms calling up saying you're in the government's after you, and they really weren't. But you've got a Pollock. That is Jeff's wife. She's now joined up with him as well to help deal with your finances. He's our lawyer. He should be your lawyer. I feel safe with my future. I feel good because he's your lawyer, because I love your family. Jeff Pollock. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com, 416-777-0088. That number again, 416-777-0088.
I'm going to give it a B+. I wasn't really listening, but it gave me time to take my rice off the stove. So that was good.
Yeah.
It's useful.
Mm-hmm.
I love Jeff Pollock.
Yeah.
Love that guy.
Yeah.
So, dot, dot, dot.
Yep.
I got a bunch here. We're probably going to wind up doing a few of these.
Okay, let's get going.
I was going to do a Jays one, but I listened back to the old podcast, and I actually had to shuttle through the part where we were talking about the Jays, because even I didn't care, and I was making the point.
Yeah.
So I was like, until they do something interesting, let's just F it.
Unless Marcus Stroman and Josh Donaldson start a weird race war where they're banded together in some odd way, not much talk about
that. Let me throw this out, and then you knock it back to me, all right?
Yep.
Hey, Josh Donaldson might wind up playing DH for the next little while. All right, moving on. All right, dot, dot, dot. And this week in clickbait, see the world's most attractive female billionaires. Didn't click on it, but I almost did. Dot, dot, dot. Winnipeg and Minnesota feels like it should be a better rivalry than it is. This could be the beginning of a beautiful love-hate relationship.
Okay.
Dot, dot, dot. Nashville locked up the season's best record last night, which means absolutely nothing. Would you rather be the top team in the league playing okay when the playoffs start, or squeak into the playoffs but be on a hot streak? Dot, dot, dot. Did I ever tell you about the time I tried to pick up Portia de Rossi? Dot, dot, dot. And finally, what the hell happened to Andrew Wiggins? Dot, dot, dot.
We will get to Portia de Rossi.
I thought we might.
We will. We're not starting there. We are not starting there.
Okay.
The clickbait ones are hilarious. The most beautiful billionaire. Here's the thing.
Female billionaire.
Female billionaire. I never do it with my home computer, only because it's slow. And those stupid sites, it seems to slow down and then 400 things open up. Now, during some of the long commercial breaks when I'm at TSN, do I click on them? Hells yes, do I click on them. Do I know what the cast of, Gilligan's Island looks like now? You damn right I do. The mysterious photos, the you can't believe they left the camera rolling and this showed up. I've clicked on all of them. They're great. They're horrible. And here's the worst part. All we do is click through 32 pictures because we want to see cleavage. Men are dumb.
So dumb.
So dumb.
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
I made the decision, the conscious decision, to not click through on clickbait. You're not going to win.
Yeah.
I will not let you get the best of me.
Yeah.
But I wrote this down in my dot, dot, dot because my finger was hovering over the mouse pad and I was so close to doing it because I wanted to see the world's most attractive female billionaires. And you know what? How could I not?
Exactly.
I was curious. And the thing that was interesting about that, too, is billionaires. I was like, oh, who's got $1 billion? So it kind of hit you on two fronts.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
One's the stupid, you know, gender-driven biological imperative.
Yes.
And the other one is, who's rich out there?
Yeah, who's rich and must see cleavage? It's so sad. Two thoughts. One, dear YouTube, your news fail compilations where the screen grab is a buxom woman. Shame on you for putting her shot in the 12-minute video at 11:23 for half a second. That is false advertising. But you know what's the other thing I will do sometimes, Bob? I do the clickbait on the thing for male imperative, I will then go and read, say, a salon think piece on how systemic racism is still around in Northeast United States because I feel I need to balance it out.
So that's you giving a charity?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah,
100%.
And does that work?
Works for me, Bob.
Yeah, you look happy.
I leave every day with a smile as I think about the Raptors or see the snow. All right, get to Portia de Rossi.
All right, so it was a CTV fall launch event. She was in some show that was there, and I was a young producer. I was in my 20s.
Hotshot, Bob Mackiewicz.
Right, and I thought, I'm going to go over and talk to Portia de Rossi. And I went over there, and I was all charming, and I talked about how, I loved you in Stigmata, which was like this tiny movie that nobody saw, but I had seen it.
Smart, good move.
Right, and I was like, you were really great in that. And we had this really lovely chat, and I walked away thinking, oh man, I think that actually kind of worked. I think I'm in there. Literally later that week, she came out of the closet.
Are you the one that tipped her over the edge going, no more with penis?
I don't think so.
I am done with the penis.
I don't think so. I don't think that my act was memorable enough to have any effect. But thank you for suggesting I was that memorable.
Yeah.
No, I just thought it was great. I had to laugh at myself because I walked away with that classic, you congratulate yourself, you pat yourself on the back, you think you're all that.
Yeah.
And then, I don't think it worked the way I thought it did.
Do you remember any of your lines?
Just the one about you were great in Stigmata.
Yeah,
because I was playing it cool.
Yeah. Oh,
hey. She was a Hollywood starlet. I was just there. Hey, I'm just here. You're here. We're human beings on this planet.
Yeah, I got that Stigmata. That was the mise en scène. And by the way, the denouement at the end, I thought I knew what was happening. And I got to say, you guys really pulled it off.
That does sound good like something pompous, I would say.
Good for you.
All right, so we're going to pick one of these sports ones.
Okay,
Andrew Wiggins, Nashville. Let's do the Nashville one because I'm curious about this. We got two playoff things coming up. All right, so they wrap up the season's best record.
Yep.
And it got me to thinking, how many times Washington has rolled in there, guns a-blazing, 10 points, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it never feels like they're going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's that team that sneaks in, like the New Jersey Devils, playing great. They get in at the last minute. Which team would you rather be? The one that's been dominant all year but isn't hot, like the Raptors.
Yep.
like the Raptors.
Don't compare basketball with hockey, but
no, but no, but, I know, but it's I know. A similar situation.
I'm sorry.
Or the team that sneaks in right at the bottom, right. Like the Miami Heat.
All right, we got 3 minutes for this.
That's it.
That's it.
Oh, geez.
I'll do this quick. NHL. I'm going to take the dominant team, and people go, "Well, what about the Kings when they win the Cup? What do the Kings do?"
Or the Preds making it to the finals.
Here's the thing. Those teams showed that they were better than what they were. Because what did that Kings team do the next 3 or 4 years? They won another cup, went to another Western Conference right. final. The Nashville Predators, 8th seed. Well, what are they this year? They're great. Last year proved in the playoffs that their regular season was, they were underachieving the regular season. So I will always, always, always take the team that was dominant throughout. As for Washington, well, the thing that dooms them is the stupid playoff seeding where you play Crosby in the second round. So I'm going to go dominant team.
I like that answer. I think that's a good one. Does it hold true in basketball as well? I think it does.
Of course, basketball.
So is this a gotcha moment where I say maybe you shouldn't be so worried about the Raptors because they're at the top of the conference?
LeBron's at the top of the conference.
Yeah.
Winter is coming, Bob, and it's LeBron. So true.
He really is like the Night King. What do they call it in Game of Thrones again? What's the creepy pale guy's name again? Is it the Night King?
Yeah, the Night King. Zombie dragon, Bob.
I know.
Zombie
it was
dragon.
A bad last season, and you know it was a bad last season.
Let's not rehash about 20 podcasts ago. So that's my answer. Your final thoughts on that before we wrap up?
Nothing really. Hey, you owe us a wine bottle to go and check out.
Ooh, yeah, that's absolutely right. Last time I did, I'm going to stick with Canada. And I'm going to go with the red wine. People think that Ontario doesn't make red wine. That's ridiculous. Just don't go with a Cabernet Sauvignon. We don't have the temperature for it. Cabernet needs a lot of heat because the skins are thick. There's one called Pearl Morset. They make a Cab Franc, which can handle a little bit cooler climate. If you can find Pearl Morset Cab Francs, they're about $30. Last time I gave you
A little pricey.
The last two times, Bob, I gave you an $11 wine and I gave you a $16 wine. Every now and then you got to splurge. Life is short. So find a Pearl Morset Cab Franc. It's around $30 and it is delicious.
And once again, it's One Love Vegetarian, 854 Bathurst Street. Go and check it out. Now, what would be a good wine to drink with a corn chowder?
Ooh, corn chowder. I'm going to go Chardonnay because corn chowder is a little bit creamy. So
probably a little spicy too.
Okay, spicy, always go Riesling. Always go Riesling. AGR if it's spicy food.
I don't know why I didn't need to actually do AGR.
Again, seatgiant.ca, discount code Bob and Matt, and our lawyer, Jeff Pollock with a G.com. Bob, Monday is going to be bananas. We know who the Leafs will play. The Masters will be done.
Yeah, but I can't do Monday.
Oh.
We haven't talked about this yet, but I've got meetings scheduled all day.
What?
Yeah. So we'll have to find another day to do it.
I hope their first meeting is for, what the hell are you doing here meeting? Fine. All right. We'll figure something out. Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.